Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Just 2 weeks ago, the plan was the Sox and Cubs would be either 1-0 or 0-1 right now. It was going to be White Sox against the Royals, Cubs at the Brewers. This pandemic changed everything, including the sports world. But we want to provide some sort of a diversion for you guys for the next couple of hours. Mark Burley turned 41 years old on Monday, but when he was 30, Burley tossed the 18th perfect game in baseball history. Only 23 of those all time. This is Joe Ostrowski along with Chris Tannehill. And the reason we're here to present this Burley gem is to bring you behind the scenes a little bit. Tell some stories from that day, July 23rd, 2009, because we worked the broadcast. We worked most White Sox radio broadcasts that year, and we were in the Scores studios on that day. To start things off, before we get to the game, for a couple of minutes, we want to go over some of our memories from that day. We're also going to provide a post-game show. We will be taking calls tonight after the final out. Our sometimes friend Chris Raji will be joining us. You may remember he was doing the pre- and post-game shows for a long, long time on the White Sox broadcast. Chris, we all recall the Dwayne Weiss catch.
Yeah, center fielder Weiss.
The final out. There's so many memories from that day. But when you think back to July 23rd, it could be before the game, as things were ramping up during the game. What are some memories that really stand out to you?
Well, first of all, Joe, thanks for having me on your show tonight, sharing your normal 6 to 10 time slot here. I mean, one of the things that I'll never forget is working with you that day and sort of the connection that you and I will always have to working in the Score studios that day. I've known you, Joe, since about 2007 when I started here as an intern at the Score. And that's one of those days in your professional career that you just never forget when you're tied to a perfect game broadcast. I just remember the crescendo of anticipation and anxiety as you're kind of got the nerves going in the studios. And, you know, truth be told, we'll talk about this in the post game, but when you work in the industry, you're not always rooting for a no-hitter or a perfect game. But I just remember as the game went on and as the nerves started to build a little bit, you get excited and you're like, all right, we've come this far. There's no turning back now. So it's like every pitch, you'll hear it on the broadcast coming up in a minute, but every pitch as you get deeper and deeper into the ball game, the anticipation builds and you can hear the excitement and then U.S. Cellular Field build with Ed and DJ's call. So I'll just never forget just sort of as the emotions ramp up over the course of this Mark Burley-esque two-hour ball game.
Well, that's what's so different about working in sports broadcasting. And it isn't the same with some of the hosts. A lot of times when you have breaking news, you know what you're going to be talking about. Okay, we're going to react to this news with the show coming up. Now, sometimes you have to deal with breaking news on the fly. But when you're working on a baseball broadcast, for this instance, you have no idea what's going to happen that day. And as longtime baseball fans, Chris, we say it all the time. it feels like a lot of times when you turn on a game or go to the ballpark, you're going to see something that you have not seen before. And when I think back to this date, July 23rd, 2009, it was kind of a ho-hum day. They were wrapping up, the White Sox, a four-game series with the Rays. I'm feeling good. It's a 107 first pitch, and Mark Burley's on the bump. So that means you're usually going to get a two-hour and 20-minute game, a Schuster special, and it's going to be a quick post-game. Because why? Let's be honest, Chris. The White Sox were not bringing in the biggest ratings, and the plan always was for those afternoon games, okay, we're going to get to Boers and Bernstein as quick as possible. So it would be a quick Chris Ronji postgame, and maybe I could be home by 4 o'clock and beat the traffic.
Yeah, you could have dinner with the wife tonight. Whenever there was a Burley start, we're like, all right, we're having dinner with our wives tonight, so so we'll be all good. But, yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I love about baseball, right, is any game you could see something that you've never seen before. That's probably my favorite part of being a baseball fan. And when I think about this game in particular, there's so many ways to look at it. And you mentioned it was the 18th perfect game in like 200 years of organized baseball, whatever it is. But I think about the game in the context of not only baseball history, but the score history. And the White Sox were our first baseball partnership on the score. And, you know, that this game was probably one of the better moments that we had with the White Sox as a partner. And, you know, it's a really historical event, not only in the White Sox history and baseball history, but in score history. You know, so much of our legacy here is you know, like back in the day, fans talking to fans, and certainly what we're going through right now, that's more prevalent than ever. But in the context of this game, it was something that we had never heard, an environment that we had never been a part of on this station before. Yeah, Burley threw his no-hitter two seasons prior to this, but a perfect game is just something that our station's history may never see again. So it was certainly an amazing day to be a part of the Score family.
And this really capped everything off for longtime White Sox fans like yourself. Mark Burley on this date became the third pitcher in Major League Baseball history, joining Cy Young and Sandy Koufax, to have a no-hitter, a perfect game, and a World Series title, all with the same team. And this happened in 2009. We're going to get to the game in just one quick moment. I want to go in more detail afterwards during our postgame, Chris. But do you recall the moment in the game when you started to get really nervous? I will admit it, not even a Sox fan. There was a moment in the game I got really nervous.
Going into the ninth, I think that's always, because then you start thinking about every possible little thing that can go wrong, because you're relying on three hitters in one inning, and that'll set up the wise catch perfectly. But, you know, any little bleeder gets through the infield, someone drops a ball. You know, Burley went 3-2 on a bunch of different hitters that day. He did not have his best stuff, and we'll talk about that later on as well. But just going into the ninth, because that's what, you know, everything is ramping up to that point, so anything can go wrong. And definitely as a White Sox fan, you tend to think of that more so than anything, but you're thinking about any possible thing that can go wrong as opposed to right. And that wise catch, it was the thing where I was like, okay, I think we're going to witness history today. And we'll talk about that more in depth later. But today, I hope, you know, Cubs and Sox fans together, I hope you're listening tonight. And opening day is usually one of those days where it's a unifier. It's a connector with all of us. And I had tickets to go to the Sox game tonight, and I'd be driving back listening to Joe right now, but that's not the world we're living in today. But I hope everyone, both sides of town, north side and south side, can enjoy this broadcast tonight.
See, you were worried about what was going to happen on the field. I was worried about the broadcast. It hit me in the seventh inning as Mitch is calling every inning, because, you know, he's got the plan going about exactly what we're going to do.
That's right.
And I started standing up in the studio. I'm thinking, okay, we can't mess this up. Word is out. Much of the city is listening right now to see if Burley can actually do this. This highlight is gonna be out there forever, right? It could be one of the greatest moments in baseball history, and it ended up being just that. This is Joe Ostrowski and Chris Tannehill. We will be back after the game for a special post game of the 18th perfect game in baseball history. But here's Ed Farmer and Darren Jackson with Burley's perfect game right here on 670 The Score.
Darren Jackson, Ed Farmer, and welcome to coverage of White Sox baseball. As the Sox trying to win for the third time and four tries against these Tampa Bay Rays. Got Kazmir will go for the Tampa Bay Rays. And Mark Burley, the All-Star, is going to try and win his 11th game of the season. In the inning, they go three up, three down. Burley ends it with a strikeout of Longoria. After a half inning, the Rays fail to score, and the White Sox are coming up here at U.S. Cellular. He's getting reached out.
Yes,
in the
sir.
Inning, three up, three down they go. Burley's retired the first six. Halfway through the second, no score.
Drive off of the bat right at the shortstop. Alexi Ramirez, a 1-2-3 fourth, as Burley will head to the dugout, leading 4-0.
This
three
game up, is going by fast.
Four strikeouts.
Which I like.
There you go.
Burley zeroes across. We're halfway through today's game. Sox four on a slam by Fields. And the 3-2. Swing, bouncing ball to short. Ramirez, a tough hop, has it. Guns, got him. Burley, perfect through six. Fly ball to right. Adai will move back, and J.D. backpedaling in front of the track makes the catch. Burley heads to the dugout. The fans on their feet for the seventh inning stretch as they salute Burley. He's been perfect through seven. Up here at U.S. Cellular, the 2-2 pitch. The swing and a line shot right at Beckham. Burley is perfect through eight. Home half coming up, 5-0 Sox.
Call your sons, call your daughters, call your friends, call your neighbors. Mark Burley has a perfect game going to the ninth.
This pitch is swinging a long one. Left center field, Wise on the run. He's at the track, he's at the fence, leaps, makes the catch.
Yes, what a play by Wise.
He took away a home run. The 2-1 to Bartlett. Swing, chop to short. Ramirez has it, throws.
Alexei.
Burley picks the perfect game. His second no-hitter. He no-hits the Tampa Bay Rays. People going crazy here at U.S. Cellular. He's mobbed by his teammates. A perfecto.
Don't stop believing. Hold on to that feeling.
It's time for the Mark Burley Perfect Game Postgame Show with original producers Joe Ostrowski and Chris Tannehill on 670 The Score.
I want more Moose Scourin. I miss Moose. Oh, man, that was great.
She says, John Polish, that means grandpa.
This postgame's going by fast.
Burley's on the mound, Moose. I completely forgot. You know, there are a lot of things, and we're going to address them over the next hour here on Sports Radio 670 The Score. But that was one of them. Back in, was it the third and the fourth? Moose Scourin, one of his great visits to the booth, and as you know, he was always hanging around during Sox home games.
Yeah, that was great. That was something that kind of withheld from everyone. I remembered it quite vividly when I pulled some clips during the 10-year anniversary, and I went back and listened to Moose clips. So I wanted that to be a special surprise for everyone that was listening tonight. Mitch texted me, and Paul Zerang texted me, so everyone was checking out Moose, so I love it.
Excellent. This is Joe Ostrowski and Chris Tannehill on Sports Radio 670, The Score. You heard in the open there from Russ Matera that we were producing that Thursday afternoon, and that's why we are here tonight to talk about the 18th perfect game in Major League Baseball history. A lot of you already texting in, thanking us, and thank you for hanging out with us, especially as we go through this pandemic over the last couple of weeks. And we'd like to hear from you guys about that day, what Mark Burley meant to you. And our phone lines are open at 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. The text message, you can text us, 67011, 67011. I'm on Twitter, at Joe0670. Chris, by his name, at Chris Tannehill. 2 hours and 3 minutes of perfection there. 116 pitches. Six strikeouts for Mark Burley. Even more amazing, Chris, that this guy, the way he operates on the mound, had two perfect games, or rather two no-hitters, one of them a perfect game, the one you just heard there, in his career. And Ed Farmer said in the close that we'd be talking about that Dwayne Wise catch for years to come. That was 11 years ago, and tonight we're going to be talking a lot about that catch. And I alluded to earlier a few things that you forget about with that game. Something that nobody should forget about is going into that ninth inning, that key decision by Ozzie Guillen to put Wise in center. Podsednik moves over for a defensive replacement for the perfect game saver. He stole a home run.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was a great move by Ozzie. And just you think of the odd circumstances surrounding that. you know, Dwayne Wise obviously being left-handed, you know, I don't know if a right-handed center fielder is able to make that play. We certainly talked about it a lot at the time. And of course, you have the bobble coming out of the glove. And what I remember most about that play in particular was we have the luxury of getting the raw feed right from the ballpark. And you hear what's happening before people on television get to see it. So when we heard that Wise had made an incredible catch, I remember standing up. This is the one vivid memory I do have that's like burned in my brain from that day. We both stood up, looked at each other. I think we both had our hands on our heads. Like, I can't believe it. This is really going to happen. And then you get to see the TV monitor and you see what an amazing catch that was. And then, of course, obviously, Dwayne Wise living, you know, he became a household name with President Barack Obama, even mentioning him, the center fielder Weiss. So, yeah, of course, you see the sign, the catch that's still hangs there today at Guaranteed Rate Field. So, yeah, definitely a catch that'll go down in history.
See, and you're excited about the Josh Field slammy. I forgot that Josh Field is the guy that caught the final out of that one.
Yeah, can we go over this lineup, for God's sakes, the Sox lineup that day? And, the improbability, you're going to hear a lot of that word today because of the circumstances surrounding this game. But just this lineup from the White Sox: Podsednik, Alexei, Jermaine Dye, Konerko, Quinton, Beckham, Jason Nix, Ramon Castro, by the way, who this was the first time that Ramon Castro ever caught Mark Burley. And you hear him talk about it in the post-game interview with Ranji, how he didn't shake him off or anything. He just threw whatever Ramon put down. And, of course, Josh Fields batting ninth at first base with the grand slam. I mean, just the defensive lineup behind Burley that day did not do him a lot of favors, but somehow he overcame it and got a lot of quick outs, a lot of first pitch outs and things of that nature. But yeah, what an odd lineup to throw out there. And I think that the 09 Sox can get on a roll here. They got a doubleheader against Detroit tomorrow.
They got to share first place now. We're sitting pretty.
Smooth sailing. And the Sox, by the way, in 09, they lost three of their next four. I remember Daniel was in the post-game press conference. He asked Mark Burley about if this would possibly be a springboard for the Sox that year. They lost three or four. So yeah, so much for that.
That sounds like a sports radio topic on July 23rd. And we don't really want to talk about NFL training camp quite yet. The Sox are sitting pretty. And, okay, so you talk about the improbability. And you mentioned just a few of the things, Chris, with the lineup, with Castro catching Burley for the first time ever. Let me add a few more things. How about the fact that it's Mark Burley? With his second no-hitter, he's a contact pitcher. Okay, so throughout his career, we all know this is not a surprise, but then I started looking at the numbers, really taking a look. This is not going to surprise any of you, but if you relate it to what we saw in 2019, where Burley would rank, it's pretty remarkable. So throughout his career, he had a 13.6 strikeout rate. If you put that in 2019, that would be the second lowest strikeout rate of any qualified starting pitcher, only ahead of Brett Anderson. His 25.4 hard hit rate would have been the lowest in baseball in 2019, and his 56.5% medium hit rate would have been the highest in 2019. I mean, just for this guy, the way he is on the mound, just fast worker, another reason media members love him, and you know, Rob Manfred probably secretly loved him before he was the commissioner of baseball, because everything he says, and we want more action in the game right now, Mark Burley's the guy. He's probably the guy he would point to. He wishes there were more starters like Burley.
So who would be, I guess, the current day comp? Would it be, ironically, Poster Dallas Boy? Keuchel? Would Dallas Keuchel be the closest comp?
You know, that's pretty good. Yeah, with the lower strikeout rate. Yeah,
but the funny thing about Burley, though, is if you remember, the start after that against the Twins, Mark Burley was all of a sudden in the Johnny Vandermeer conversation with can he throw back-to-back no-hitters. He retired the first 17 batters he faced that next outing against the Twins on July 28th. So this was a really, really remarkable run. Burley was one of the better pitchers in baseball then, but like you said, just total antithesis of the type of pitchers we see today. I don't know if that's for better or for worse, but it certainly is a more compelling game of baseball. And considering all the balls that were in play this game, there wasn't too many amazing, like, you know, hold your breath moments defensively behind him. There was a couple. There was one with Ben Zobrist, you know, where he had a little dribbler that just barely went foul. There was one early in the game with Pat Burrell almost taking him deep. And, of course, the Wise catch. But there wasn't a lot of, you know, moments where you're like, oh, man, defense really saved him. Especially when you consider all the contact. That's really remarkable.
Yeah, well, of course, there's the Wise catch. But the top of the eighth, to close the inning there, that Burrell liner that just barely went foul, right? I mean, there was a lot of luck there. There was luck in what Wise did. Great accomplishment, but that's what you get when you have Mark Burley out there for everything to fall perfectly. Man, it's just it all has to go well for him. And you're right. That next start 5 days later on July 28th, when he retired the first 17 batters. Going into the sixth inning. At the time, that was a Major League Baseball record, retiring 45 consecutive batters.
Amazing. It's really hard to believe when you think about Mark Burley. But, of course, it had to be the Twins in the Metrodome that day. That was a close game, if I remember correctly. But if you look at early in the game, the first pitch of the game, like I'm listening on the way home today, and there's... of course, he was then B.J. Upton, but the modern-day Melvin Upton Jr., first pitch swinging right out of the box. They're barely done doing the lineups, and there's already one out. I think there was three or four first-pitch outs in this ball game, so that you wonder how you get a two-hour perfect game. It's a lot of that, but with Burley's stuff that day, I don't blame any of them for swinging early, but he was pulling the string on him with the changeup, having him off balance all day.
Okay, let's add to the improbability a little bit more, Tanny. The word of the night, this was a very good Rays team. They finished the year 84-78, and this Tampa Bay lineup, B.J. Upton, Carl Crawford, Evan Longoria, Carlos Peña hitting cleanup, Ben Zobrist fifth, Pat Burrell, Gabe Kapler's hitting seventh. They were no joke. In 2009, fifth in the league in OPS, six in homers, and six in on-base percentage at .343.
Well, yeah, it was your standard-issue Joe Maddon team of the time, right? You know, just patient hitters, high OBP. Remember, this team was coming off an American League pennant the year before. They had lost in the World Series to the Phillies. So this team was no joke. Like you said, Carlos Peña led the American League in home runs, I believe, at the time of this ball game. So this was a pretty good team, and I still, listening back, every time Ben Zobrist is up, I think he's still going to get a hit, even 11 years later.
Right down the line?
Exactly, yeah, because even, you know, before Ben Zobrist became a household name and a World Series MVP, he was a White Sox killer early in his career, so it's funny. Can you name the three guys played in this game that are still in baseball today, Joe?
Longoria.
Yep.
In the game, not just on one
right
team
in
or the
yeah
other.
In the lineups, yeah.
Man, are there any?
Well, Zobrist technically hasn't retired yet.
Oh, that's a technicality. Okay, you're not counting
Gordon
Kapler,
Beckham.
Are you?
Okay. No, and Gordon Beckham.
Oh, jeez, I would have been here all day. He got all the easy plays at third base too. Do you see all those soft liners over to him?
Oh, no doubt. Does it make you feel old, though? This game was only 11 years ago, and all of a sudden, all these guys are out of baseball now.
Yeah, Carl Crawford's rich somewhere. He's good.
Jeez. Yeah, Kenny will sign him.
Yeah, but they're all over the place. There's many still involved in the game. You see Carlos Peña, he's breaking it down on MLB Network. We didn't think that would be the case.
Oh, analysts all up and down the lineup. Scotty Pods, yeah. Gordo will be, Beckham will be an analyst too before it's all said and done. So.
Joe Maddon's crew, and Joe Maddon's still in the game. Yeah,
By Joe Maddon there at the end of the game with the whole team, you know, in the top step of the dugout, giving Burley the standing O. That was very nice. I forgot that moment. In the moment, because after the game ends, we're sort of just frantically running back and forth in the studio, making sure everything's good, making sure all the highlights are right, screening the call. So I forgot about that little moment that Ed and DJ described of the entire Tampa Bay Rays team giving Burley a standing O. That was very cool to go back and hear that tonight.
So about a week or so ago, MLB Network ran this game. So I had the TV version sitting on the DVR. Sat down, watched it earlier today, and Hawk was cracking me up. Of course, we've got the legendary call your sons, call your daughters, call your friends, call your neighbors going into the ninth for Burley. But when the Weiss play happened, it was one of the greatest catches I have ever seen 50 years in the game. And then a few minutes later, right after the game, it was the best play he's ever seen under the circumstances.
Under the circumstances, yeah. But it's funny because everyone, you know, knows Hawk from that game, call your sons, call your daughters. But I think he had done it the season prior with Gavin Floyd. So Hawk definitely didn't shy away from you know, he didn't. He broke all the baseball announcer commandments, which I think we're moving away from today, 11 years later.
Sign me up for that.
Yeah. Exactly. Farmio through Burley perfect through sixth. I wrote it down here. Through the seventh, the fan standing. Mark Burley's perfect through the seventh. And, of course, in the ninth inning, I cracked up because I forgot about this part. DJ saying, my hands are sweaty. Farmer says, my back is sweaty.
Yeah, he did. I did laugh at that.
So I can say both TV and radio on the right side of history on this one, letting your listenership and your viewership know that there was a perfect game going on.
I mean, Tanny, how many flashbacks did you have? Not only to July 23, 2009, but just hearing nine innings of Ed and DJ again.
Well, I mean, I'm still an avid White Sox listener. I like Ed and
DJ. Sure, but it's been a while, you know?
But yeah, all the little bits, you know. Yeah. The story early on in the ballgame about DJ getting into an argument with an umpire saying to bring a ruler to home plate next time, and then yeah. Farmer said, I would really do it. I'd bring a ruler out there. And I'm like, yeah.
I know you would.
Yes, you would. But yeah, it was cool that, you know, and the game, by the way, before we move on, baseball on the score, I mean, it's hard to believe anything could sound better than this game did, because we had the great Mark Zerang engineering that game that day, mm-hmm. and he was the engineer for us and the Sox at the time, and he's no longer with us. He passed away a year later, but just listening to the game, just the quality of it, just sounded so great. And I was texting with Ziggy Zerang during the game, and he'll be doing Cubs games.
It's his brother,
this year.
By the way.
Yeah, he'll be doing Cubs games this year with us on the score when we finally get baseball going again. And of course, their other brother, Little Z, who does the Chicago Bears broadcast. And it was great sounding, and we certainly miss Mark every day. And if you go up to Ed and DJ's booth, it has the sign up there, the Mark Zerang broadcast booth. And of course, eventually they renamed the broadcast area the Hawk Harrelson broadcast area. And mm-hmm. then I remember Ozzie Guillen going up there and putting the sign on the bathroom. Do you remember this, Joe? And calling it
yes.
the Ed Farmer bathroom. and drawing a picture of Ed. So, yeah. But
yeah, Ranji sent that picture to everybody.
But yeah, it was just nice to hear everyone, and it did bring back a lot of great memories. But we certainly miss Mark, and I want to say hello to Paul Zerang out there.
Yes, and I absolutely echo those sentiments. And what one of the great gifts that I've received is getting a copy of Ed Farmer's box score from you, and both of our names are on there because we were producing that broadcast.
It's crazy, right? I didn't even know.
The first time I looked at that, I did get chills, Tanny.
I did too, yeah. I mean, I didn't even know that. I didn't know if Farmer kept box scores on a daily basis like that. You know, I know certainly knew that he kept them on a day-to-day basis, but I did not know that if he was someone that kept them. And certainly 10 years later, I had no idea that there was a box score with the perfect game with our names on it. So when Paul Zerang showed it to me and eventually sent me a copy, I was floored, because you kind of put it behind you and you don't really think about it. But then to see your name on there, you see the time of game, and then there's Burley's signature on there, and then our name's there. It's pretty cool. So, yeah, I was looking at it down in my basement when I was listening to the game tonight.
That's Chris Tannehill. My name's Joe Ostrowski. You've got Sports Radio 670, The Score. We're kind of reliving Mark Burley's perfect game, the 18th in baseball history. We've only seen 23 of these, folks, and we want to hear from you guys. The phone lines are open at 312-644-6767. We are reading all your texts rolling in to 67011. Let's go to the north side. Maureen, you're on 670, The Score.
Good evening.
Hi, Maureen.
Hi.
To say thank you to you guys is lame. because what you don't know is that the day that game was played 11 years ago, I was having surgery at Northwestern Hospital, and I never got to hear one play. And you brought it to me tonight. For the first time, I heard that game.
Wow.
Glad to hear it. Thank you so much for the phone call, Maureen. Did any part of that game did just get back to you? Did you watch the game or at
no,
some point?
No, I was in the middle of surgery, and I'm totally blind. I never watch games on TV. So the only thing I heard was a highlight of the Dwayne Wise catch.
Okay.
That
All
was
right.
the only thing I ever heard until tonight.
Great. Stay safe, Maureen. Thanks for checking in.
That's amazing. I mean, I didn't think we'd get that call right out of the box tonight, but yeah, I'm glad that that people were able to hear this for the first time. You know, you take it for granted, but that's amazing. I'm glad she called.
Yeah, I mean, you could find, if you're looking for the TV version, you could probably find that on YouTube. Like I mentioned, MLB Network is running it recently. You could find that, but a lot of people do prefer baseball on radio. And where do you find that? That's not archived a lot of places. We've been getting texts here at 67011, Tanny, and some people mentioning, thank you so much. I needed it. We all need this right now. But also people saying, you know what? I was busy at work that day. I couldn't hear the broadcast. I was out of town that week. Thank you so much for playing it.
Well, there is also a little bit of personal redemption for me in there, because back in 2007, my dad and I, we had season tickets, and you know, it was a cold, you know, I think it was a May night or April night, and my dad called and he said, hey, do you want to go to the game tonight? Burley's pitching, but the weather's supposed to be bad. And I was, you know, I was working at Jewel at the time, and it was a long day of work. Yeah, I was over at the Jewels, and it was a long day, and I was tired, and weather was bad. And then Mark Burley goes out there and throws a no-hitter against the Texas Rangers. It's one of my sports regrets in my life. So I always felt bad about that. But then working this perfect game broadcast in the studio with you that day, it sort of made things right with me, because I knew that was a special thing that I got a chance to be in there that day. So, it was a lot of wrongs were righted that day, at least for me as a Sox fan.
You mentioned the two of us standing up simultaneously during that Wise catch. And I remember later in the game, I was standing a lot. And for those that don't know, you don't really stand up to run the board. You'd have to be hunched over to run the control board if you are standing up in the room. But I was so nervous, I had to walk around in that studio a little bit. And as I was doing that, I was hoping nobody would walk in, because people love to just come and hang out in the studio.
The control room is the epicenter
no
of the station. Yeah,
there's no show on the air. It's a party in the studio. And meanwhile, I'm like, hey, I need to listen here. I'm working over here.
Did Bernstein walk in at any point? Because Dan and Terry would have been up next. Is he perfect? Is Burley perfect still? What's going on?
Yeah.
But I'm sure Mitch kept everyone out. If I remember correctly, I think I kind of helped with that. But Mitch definitely, I'm sure, kept the studio clear that day. But yeah, I remember the only time Joe would stand during a baseball game on the radio is, of course, when you played Start Me Up at the top of the first and do the Mick Jagger stroll. So those are the only times that Joe would stand.
And another reminder, 11 years later, I'm like, oh, God, what a bunch of awful music selections by Ostrowski. If I knew we were going to be playing this game tonight and talking about it, I would have thought more about it instead of just picking what was next in the bad rotation in the Sox tab.
I was going to ask you if there was any thought process to playing Coldplay during Mark Burley's perfect game. You're not like Herb, where during Philip Umber's perfect game decided to keep playing nothing but bands from Seattle. So I know you're not like, you know, you don't have radio OCD like Herb does. So, okay, that's good that you didn't think about it. You're just kind of going with the flow.
Tanny, you've worked with me a long time. What do you think?
I knew the answer.
I don't care about the music. I'm like, okay, let's just stay on the air, not mess it up. And, you know, there are certain bands that Ed likes. I would play those bands, which you heard a little bit of. And you know, classic rock, I think, works for a lot of White Sox fans. So you heard a good amount of classic rock, too.
It does. I had no, looking back, I had no problems with the music selection, Joe, so you're fine.
Well, if you're saying that, I feel quite all right. Mike and DeKalb, you're on the score with Joe Ostrowski and Chris Tannehill. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys, I don't think anyone has sports OCD like Herb does, too, so I think that's a good point to start
Oh,
on.
Dude, I mean, he's very strange. You're going to lose fan card if you walk around a new stadium during the game. Yeah, he's very odd.
So I work out here at NIU Athletics, and I actually, for the first time this year, broke out the scorebook I bought for this baseball season and scored the game while listening to it. That's how much of a nerd I feel like I am tonight. And it's just crazy, too, to think of how Burley gets 27 outs. 7 of them were fly ball outs. And, again, the guy who pitches the contact, just how much he kept the ball in the infield was just incredible on that day.
No doubt. And, you know, I mentioned he didn't have particularly his best stuff that day, but he was keeping a lot of the Rays hitters off balance. So to his credit, maybe he knew he didn't have his best stuff, but he was, you know, mixing it up out there, you know, used the changeup effectively. And how weird is this? Another odd little tidbit, of course, Eric Cooper, the home plate umpire that day, also the home plate umpire for the no-hitter in 2007. So another one of those weird connectors in that game.
Yeah, I mean, I would have made a prop bet on a perfect game if I had thought about that. Was something else that came to mind as you watch Mark Burley, and a reason that just about all of White Sox Nation loves him so much. The only negative thing, Tanny, throughout his career that I would ever hear Sox fans say would be when they would just kind of throw it out there. Oh, he wants to be with the Cardinals anyways. You know, that's
right.
But that's it. I mean, all 15 years when he had full seasons, all 15 years, he made at least 30 starts, 490 starts over a 15-year period, averaging nearly 33 starts per year. Almost nobody does that unless your name's John Lester.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. And the funny thing about that Cardinals thing is he never pitched there. I think he had his opportunities late in his career, and he was still effective, you know, in his years with the Blue Jays and with the Marlins. But he never went out of his way to make sure he was a St. Louis Cardinal. Do you remember, I think it was the 06 World Series, there was photos of Mark Burley watching the Cardinals beat the Tigers in the World Series that year, and Sox fans got so mad.
Yes. Well, part of the reason is, during interviews, don't you remember, it was always a thing because he would never shut it down. Because he grew up a Cardinals fan. I don't know why that was brought up. Like, no other player, baseball player, either side of town, do you ever remember that being a thing? Like, oh, he definitely is going to end up playing for the team he grew up rooting for.
It's a White Sox fan insecurity thing. Anything good that we have, you know, we know we're not going to have it for very long. But Burley's certainly the exception. And that day, July 23rd, 2009, Mark Burley cemented himself as a White Sox legend. I was there when they retired the number 56, and you talk about...
I was there.
I was sitting next to Herb. It was hot. The no-hitter, the perfect game, a save in the World Series after having a couple adult beverages. I mean, the guy's a White Sox legend, so this is just the cap to his career in a White Sox uniform, and also sort of the end of the greatest 10 years in White Sox history, I think. This was sort of the culmination of all that. Granted, you only have the one World Series title and three division titles in the 2000s, but this was as good as it got for the White Sox back then, even though we talk about how, you know, we were mad that Mark Burley wanted to be a St. Louis Cardinal.
I quickly mentioned it in our short pregame, but let me hammer this home because I know it's a much different audience as people realize this game was being broadcast tonight and they're just kind of hanging out with us. The third pitcher in Major League Baseball history to have a no-hitter, perfect game, and a World Series title with the same team. Cy Young, Sandy Koufax, and Mark Burley.
Amazing. Yeah. I don't know what else can you say other than it's I don't think it's something that we'll ever see again in this town, that's for sure.
No question. Let's go out to the Western Burbs. Kyle, you're on 670 The Score. Good evening, Kyle.
Yeah, man, how's it going?
Doing well, man.
Yeah, it's nice to hear Tanny on the radio. I just had a funny story. I was like, Tanny, I missed a no-no. my brother, his first one, my brother had 8 extra tickets and only 2 people went. But then for the perfecto, we were all at work and he was working at the Board of Trade. And as soon as the game completed, I asked him to go down and buy a stub from the brokers at the bottom of the Board of Trade. So I have a cool stub of the game, of the no-no, because the brokers had so many unsold tickets and they couldn't sell them. And the brokers didn't even know what was going on.
Oh, okay.
Appreciate the phone call. Thank you for the kind words. And I think I can speak for a lot of Sox fans when I say I also have the stub from the 2007 no-hitter, because there were so many people that chose not to go that night. And I have the stub probably displayed in my White Sox memorabilia display case as if I went to the game. So
hey, man.
We have the season ticket stub. So
you didn't have to mention that on the air. Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, we're being real out here, Joe.
You are a fraud. Yeah. Tanny, do you want to talk to Ranji next?
Oh, do we have to?
No, we don't. We can pretend he's Rudy and DeKalb.
Well, let's line them all up. Dave and Berwin, Owen and Willowbrook. Let's line them all up to talk to Ranji. Although the CDC recommends that we don't talk to him, I think, generally. I don't know if that's on the radio, too, if that's the same as real life. But, we can give it a shot, see how it goes.
I mean, of all people, Ranji must hate being forced to stay inside at all hours. Boy, I wonder how he's coping.
We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll do that next. Joe Ostrowski, Chris Tannehill here, reliving Mark Burley's perfect game on Sports Radio 670, The Score. We're going to check in with our old buddy, Chris Reed, former pre- and post-game host. Many, many, many hundreds. It's got to be over 1,000 at the very least. White Sox broadcast on The Score. That is next right here on WSCR, The Score.
Chris Ranji, you're down there with Mark Burley. Congratulations.
Joe Ostrowski and Chris Tannehill with you on 670, The Score, reliving Mark Burley's perfect game, the 18th in Major League Baseball history. Well, let's talk about it. We bring in Chris Ranji. Let's head down to St. Louis. Ranji, great job with your post-game interview.
Hey, he congratulated me. I was Chris, like, hey, thanks, man.
You're on with me and Joe. Congratulations.
What's going on to you, Chris? Prize. Congratulations. What the hell did I do?
Are you? Is your name on Ed Farmer's box score or scorecard, rather?
I don't know.
Yikes.
I don't know.
Oof, I don't think it awkward. Is.
It's probably not, because he didn't
talk to you.
You know what? I never even looked.
Do you have a copy?
No.
I've got a copy for Ranji if he wants it. I've
oh,
got
thanks,
an extra
buddy.
One. Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to have it.
He's a Cardinals
only
fan. So.
Dave Wills' name is on here, actually.
Is it?
It probably is. It's Dave Wilder, who was a Michael Gulnick. Was that his name?
Oh, my gosh.
Was it him? I don't know. Do you guys know the only scorecard I have a copy of is the one that we all got for Game 7 in Cleveland?
The Cubs World Series? Really?
Yeah, that's the only one I have. Yep.
That one's in my bathroom.
Perfect.
It's cool, though. It is one of the cool score artifacts that I have, Pat Hughes' Cubs World Series winning box score. There's something new that I see on there that I like every day. But, yeah, I never used to be a big memorabilia person, especially about work-related stuff. But, it's pretty cool to be on the Burley scorecard. I guess you just will never know that feeling.
Well, it's great when you get a free artifact and you don't have to pay for one.
Ranji, were you there for his other no-hitter?
Yeah, I was there for both of those. The other one was in 07, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I was there for that one and the perfecto, and Liriano pitched one for the Twins. Do you remember that?
I was there that night in the stands.
Okay,
that was a rough one.
Yeah, it was. So I've been live for three, but you know, two White Sox ones, and then Liriano's when he was with Minnesota. Yeah, well, we were there for all of them, man.
On the TV broadcast, Stoney mentioned that it was the first no hitter he was ever there. He was ever in person.
Right. Well, so if you remember when Burley pitched the no hitter, Stone wasn't doing radio or TV for the White Sox yet. He didn't start that, I don't think, until probably 2008.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he wouldn't have been there for that first one.
And hearing DJ talk about that, too, in the final segment, and you think about, you know, we haven't been in this business that long compared to people that have been in baseball 30, 40 years. What DJ was talking about, the rarity and how they had never seen anything like that. And we got a chance to see two perfect games together, Chris, you and I did. We worked two broadcasts together, of course, Phil Umber's perfect game. But it's kind of crazy to think about it in such a small amount of time, seeing that much history for the White Sox.
We, Tanny, we saw, while we were busy doing White Sox broadcasts, I think we saw more no-hitters than playoff games.
That's true.
Seriously. Well, hold on. We saw the exact same amount because the White Sox lost there.
In four, right? Four games to the Rays. Yeah.
So while we were doing the broadcast, there were as many no-hitters as there were Sox playoff games. That's awesome.
Well, I mean, since the World Series, what games talked about more than this or as much as this? It's the blackout game.
Yep.
It's a game 163.
So, and I'll tell you, as much fun as both of the no-hitters were, and I was on the field again for Tomy's 500. Okay, so I got to be up close to all of those. The best game that I was actually at ever, the one that I had the most, I guess, visceral reaction to, was that one. What was the blackout game 163? Just because of everything that had to go on leading up to it, in order for it to be an opportunity for them to have that game and then to go on and win it, and the way the game went, where there was no offense until Tomy hit that bomb, and I think it was the most nervous I have been at a sporting event live. You know what? I'm not sure there's one that I've been more nervous at that I can remember. I was really, really nervous for that one. Like, not quite terrified, but I remember my stomach was in knots. And you guys both know that being at the ballpark, they used to take really good care of us and bring us food. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get to eat probably around the third or fourth inning or whatever, and it would all be great food. I couldn't even eat. I was so locked up and nervous that I couldn't even eat the food they brought up. So that to me was probably the most exciting game, even though the perfect game was, I mean, it's hard to really compare them, but the emotions of that blackout game were something I've never experienced before and not since.
Do you ever take a minute and think about that blackout game and think about how on the field after the game, there you are interviewing Jim Tomy, Ken Griffey Jr.?
Yes, and honestly, the things I remember most were not the – I remember talking to Griff. I mean, because it's Ken Griffey Jr. I feel like I was kind of not all the way in the outfield and left field, but I was like maybe just beyond third base. I was out there in the grass. But the first person I talked to was Danks, who pitched, and I think he threw like eight innings or something, and that was the first guy I talked to. And I remember him like trembling. He was shaking because he was just so, you know, I guess excited and nervous, and he pitched a really good game, obviously. So I remember that. I remember that very, very well. And then after that, talked to Tomy, talked to Griffey. And I think that was actually the only time I interviewed Griffey all year while he was there.
Joe Ostrowski and Chris Tannehill, Sports Radio 670, The Score, reliving Mark Burley's perfect game, July 23rd, 2009. With our buddy Chris Ranji. Chris, can you talk about what Mark Burley meant to Sox fans? You talked to as many Sox fans as anybody over the years, and take us behind the scenes a little bit, because you got to talk to him throughout his time here.
You know, I talked to Bruce Levine yesterday because he wrote the piece for 670thescore.com, you know, talking about that night. And we talked a little bit about Burley, too, and just what it was like to cover him. And it's everything that you've ever heard about him. And I know people listening have heard all kinds of stories about Burley and how easygoing he was as a player and just a different kind of attitude. And, you know, even in the midst of a no-hitter and then the perfect game, he's in the dugout and he's loose and he's talking to people. You know, most guys who are in the middle of a perfect game, they go in the dugout and they get all stoic and serious and they go sit at the opposite end of the dugout. But he didn't. You know, he's walking up and down the dugout saying like, hey, you guys see that I got a no-hitter going up there? Like,
yeah, Farmer mentioned in his call, Farmer mentioned Mark Burley in the eighth inning, he's looking for someone to talk to.
Right? I remember. So it was on MLB Network a couple of nights ago, and so I happened to watch the final few innings, and it was either before the eighth or before the ninth. He's in the dugout. He's got his arm with a towel around it, and he's talking to people. Like, he's just standing up and having conversations like he's not even playing that night. And most guys do not do that. And I know people who follow baseball know how weird pitchers can be and how superstitious they are and how superstitious ball players in general are. And so they won't talk to the pitcher. But he didn't fit any of that. And I can't speak for him totally, but I wonder if a lot of him and the way he went about his business was because he almost felt like he couldn't believe he was even where he was, you know, at that position, being the draft pick as low as he was picked and nobody expecting him to do what he did. And then being just really good at his job and everybody loved him. And he never let the moment seem to get to him. And maybe I guess that could be, you know, like over grandizing a guy who is gone, you know, who doesn't play anymore, and we tend to blow out of proportion how great of a person they were or how legendary they were. But I kind of think a lot of it is true when it comes to him, because he just, you know, he was so good at what he did, but he never acted like it. You would not have known he was a baseball player if you didn't actually see him do it and you just met the guy. You wouldn't have thought, oh yeah, that's a pro athlete. He just didn't have that personality. And when those moments came, the big moments, he never really seemed to let it get the best of him. And you guys remember the beginning of 06 when he did not start well. You guys remember that, right?
Where I think he was coming off, there was somewhat of an injury. Like, I think there was some hiccups in spring training, if I remember correctly. Something like that.
They used to deal with that a lot with him, or he dealt with it. And I remember a lot of times in spring, they would limit his appearances and innings because they were trying to keep him fresh for the season. But he even admitted, I think late in 06 or maybe after the 06 season, that the length of the 05 season, how long they played and going all the way through the World Series, took a toll on him. And he had a hard time recovering for the beginning of 06. Well, he struggled a lot. And there were times where, I mean, I vividly remember being at the ballpark and hearing people boo him because of a performance that wasn't all that good. And that happened a lot. He rebounded by the very next season. And that was the larger point I wanted to make here, is that after doing what he did in 05 and then having the struggles he did in 06, for a lot of people, I could see that getting to them to the point where they start to question whether or not they can even do this anymore, or, you know, maybe I was on borrowed time this entire time. But he never let that get to him. And by the time 2007 rolled around, I also vividly remember people saying, if you do not re-sign him, fans telling the White Sox, if you do not re-sign this guy, I'm never coming back here again.
Give him a reason. Give me any reason. I will not go.
I took so many phone calls, and maybe you guys remember.
I screamed so a lot many of those calls. Yeah.
You probably made one of them too.
Oh yeah, I egged them on too, no doubt.
Yeah, I vividly remember people saying stuff like that. You better resign him, or I'm never coming back. And that was a year after a lot of them were saying, you know what, if you want to go to St. Louis, just get the hell out of town.
I was just talking about that, Chris. Yeah. Like that's the only negative thing you ever heard about Burley. And for some reason, it stuck with him. I guess it was because he never completely shut it down.
Yeah.
Do you remember any other player just in this town we kept bringing up, well, he wants to go play for the team he grew up loving anyway?
No. No,
he never said it, right?
Not ever once. Not ever once. And maybe some of it is that I think, oh gosh, was it the it might have been the 06 World Series. Remember when he showed up at Busch Stadium for a World Series game?
We were just talking about that.
He's wearing a Cardinals hat.
Oh man.
I think Sox That's fans awesome. loved Mark Burley so much. It was sort of like, you know, it was like a scorned lover type of thing where the Sox fans loved him so much and knew it was going to make him happy if he pitched for the Cardinals. So they just wanted to get him out of town fast. Like, just go already. No. So you don't, you know, burn us later. And we don't, you know, I think it was a lot of that to it, you know. But I remember, I think it was right before the trade deadline. I think it was 07 when it was like, oh my God, this could be Mark Burley's last start. In a White Sox uniform, and I remember him coming out of the game, pitched a great game that day, and then all of a sudden, I think they announced his contract extension before the game had ended. It was really weird. Yeah, I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I remember them doing it, and I don't remember the exact timeline of them making the announcement, but I remember them playing, I think, when he came off the field, the Foo Fighters the hero, you know, there goes my hero. Like, I remember them playing that because it could have been his last start, or you know, it was right before the deadline, and then they announced the extension.
It wasn't Thunderstruck?
It was not Thunderstruck, no. They did not use Thunderstruck, not that time. But I remember the Foo Fighters song, and I remember them making the announcement, and then everybody cheering because of the announcement. I love... Man, I miss White Sox fans so much. I'm not.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
I believe Ranji, because Chris, as you know, well, your show doesn't take any phone calls, but people don't call anyone anymore. White Sox fans will call you because they've got something to say and they're mad about something.
I love it. I miss it. As angry as I used to get sometimes, you know, like, who the hell are these people? I miss them. I miss them. I miss Rocco on the south side.
Rocco.
Do you miss Rudy and DeKalb?
Yes. I miss Rudy and DeKalb.
Dave and Berwin?
Yes, Dave and Berwin. And the guy who used to think Paul Konerko was an idiot and didn't know how to hit, and he was a hitting instructor, and Konerko could learn a thing or two from him. I remember all of them.
The people that wanted Jim Thome to lay a bunt down every once in a while to keep the defense honest.
Yep. The bunt guy. The
en route to 600 home runs.
Why doesn't Jim Thome bunt more?
I only miss the guys going through the drive-thru asking for extra ice.
Oh, yeah.
Henry and Harvey, baby.
Man, I miss that. God, there are so many great ones. We had so many awesome callers.
We did.
In hindsight, we really did. You know,
honestly, Ranji, answer something, because this is something at the time you would never admit to, but now all these guys are retired. Did any players ever come up to you in the clubhouse or just on the field and talk to you about the calls that you get that they would listen driving home?
Did I remember? No, not really. I remember.
Did Greg Walker ever come up to you and talk about the callers on the postgame show?
Matt
Greg
Thornton didn't say a thing, huh?
I don't think so. Not that I remember. I remember two times people came up to me and asked me about anything that happened during a postgame show. One was Scott Podsednik when, you know, he had left town. Okay, so Pods had left town. Maybe he went to the Padres, if I remember, or something, right? And then they ended up bringing him back a couple of years later. Here's what I remember. I remember
he did
one
come
time
back
during
later,
a
postgame. Yeah.
Okay, he did, but this might have been before that. I don't know. I remember during a postgame show because by 06, you know, Pods had lost a little bit. You know, he'd lost a step or something. He just wasn't productive. And I remember during a postgame me saying, you know, that maybe he might want to consider or they might want to consider a bench role or a backup role or a lesser role of some kind. And the next day I saw him in the dugout and you know, he's from Texas, right? So he's got a little bit of a Texas accent and he saw me. He's like, "Franj, backup role, huh? Come on, man." And then he went and got on the field and I was like, "Oh," I'm like, "Well, you know, I don't know." Maybe
does Pods make that catch instead of what, like Weiss did?
Oh, I probably not. But he wasn't. Was he even playing center field? No, he did for a while.
They moved him over. They slid him over from center to left.
Yeah, they did.
But we're talking about how weird it is that, you know, a right-handed center fielder probably doesn't make that play.
Yeah, well, probably not. I mean, you've got to – unless – I mean, it still would have been difficult. That would have been a really tough play to make. And I was also remembering that opening day. Do you guys remember how pissed off everybody was that they made the decision, Dwayne Wise is our starting center fielder for 09? And how mad everybody was. They didn't go get a, quote, real center fielder. Do you guys remember opening day?
I do. Opening day's always a big thing with Sox fans. They're really mad about something. And remember the day that Ozzy was swearing on the air with Mike North? It was because North was ripping them because AJ wasn't in the starting lineup on opening day.
Was that – I don't know. Was that opening day?
Or it was home opener or
Cubs
opening
Sox,
day.
Maybe?
I feel like that was 06
no, you're right.
or something. And
you're
I
right.
feel like it was
you're
before
right.
a Cubs game, and that yes. was when he did the, you know, you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen, Junior.
Junior.
Yeah, right. Called him Junior.
Watch your damn mouth when you're talking
to me.
Keep
it clean.
Gee, my God, North. What the hell's the matter
with
you?
But how about Ozzy, too? Ozzy would listen to the postgame show. I remember he went on one of those great rants one time about, you know, he's like, "You got these people calling, asking why I know back Carlos Quinton third, you Mexican."
Yep. Yeah, he is. Dude, he is. I remember Ozzy one time, somebody was talking about Carlos Quinton in the dugout. This is before a game. And Ozzy is just talking about how people, like how hitters behave and how their mindsets are. And he's talking about how tightly wound Quinton was. And I don't remember exactly what he said, but I remember the face he made talking about Quinton. And he's like, "That guy, whew," you know, like "that guy is wound up tight, like in a bad way." And he just couldn't get out of his own way sometimes. He was super talented. But,
well, yeah, that's what the end of 2008 was. I mean, he got so mad at himself for fouling off a pitch that he broke his wrist on his own bat.
Stupid.
And that pretty much that killed that team that year. They still made the playoffs, but they needed that bat because, you know, they were still a pretty good lineup, but against that Rays team who basically had a lot of the same guys that played in this perfect game. But, yeah, that killed them that year.
He was their best hitter that year. Like, he was their most
An MVP
dangerous
candidate.
Guy. Yep, absolutely. And that... I, you're right. That screwed him. I mean, they may not have won that series anyway, but there was no chance without him in the lineup. And so going back to what we were talking about, guys, like the other phone call that I remember somebody in with the team asking me about was, I believe it was 06, and it was after a game they had won. And you remember when Coop called in?
I was just going to ask you about Coop. Yes, I do. I think he called me once when I was doing a weekend show, too. He was mad about something. Yeah.
Well, he wasn't mad this time. He was, what's the word? He was lubed up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And he called in. Do you guys remember? And he's like, I've been having a few El Presidentes, if you know what those are. Which is like,
I don't. I still don't. Almost 15 years later.
I want to say it's either a Venezuelan or a Dominican beer.
Okay.
And so somebody had had him in the clubhouse after the game, and they were having a few. And, well, Coop listened to the post-game show, and he decided to call in. So Burley and I think AJ and maybe somebody else came up to me the following day and said, hey, did Coop call you drunk? And I was like, yeah, maybe. Maybe he might have.
And he was a little lubed up for all those Sunday shows that you guys would do from the bar from time to time.
Yeah, and he would wander off. He'd disappear, and we'd come back from break, and we wouldn't know where he was.
Hey, my favorite, though, Coop at the Cork, when Jeff Cox was a third base coach. This is my favorite thing that I never saw in person. But, Ron, you got to paint a picture for me. So Jeff Cox is a third base coach, but it looks like he could pass for somebody's dad in Canaryville. So he's at the Coop at the Cork remote, and he goes up on the stage, and our buddy Brendan McCaffrey stops him from going up there because he thinks he's just some guy.
That's right. I remember that. He's like, sir, they're doing a broadcast up here.
He's like, yeah, I'm Jeff Cox. He's with he had that funny voice.
Do you guys remember when Jeff Cox, so he had, you know, like a lot of people do, a lot of the players and coaches, a dealership in town will give them a car to drive during the season.
Or Chris Mangi.
Or me, yeah, right. And the trade-off is you go and, I mean, I didn't have to go sign autographs because nobody wanted that crap, but...
Remember when Adam Eaton took your car?
Did that happen? I thought a Blackhawks player did.
Someone took Ronji's car.
Yeah, somebody took my car. I thought that was a Blackhawks player. I don't remember. Anyway, so Cox had a car, and he parked it on some busy street. I don't know if it was Belmont or whatever. Well, he comes out to his car one day, and there's yellow paint. It's been hit. It's been sideswiped. And it's on the driver's side. And so he, you know, didn't know what to do. So he had convinced himself that because it was yellow paint, that a school bus must have hit it. All right? So,
okay. Gumshoe Cox is on the case.
So apparently, and this is according to multiple sources, he, either that day or the next day, at around the same time, he made a little sign out of cardboard, and he sat on the hood of that car. And every time a school the sign said something like, "If you hit my car, please call me," and it had his phone number. And he sat on the hood of his car, and every time a school bus would come by, he'd lift up the sign and show the driver. I have multiple sources with the team that he did that. And then somebody said, "Coxie, all you got to do is just tell the dealership. They'll take care of it." And he's like, "Okay, well, I just wanted to handle it first."
I don't believe any of this.
Oh, no, I totally believe it. Oh, I 100% believe it happened. I trust my sources.
Ronji, thanks for taking us down memory lane. All the Sox fans texting in really enjoyed the
conversation. We'd ask you how you're doing, but we don't care.
Yeah.
You sons of bitches. I love you and I miss you.
Miss you too.
Are you guys, you're in separate places right now, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in my basement.
Okay, we are all still, as of right now, in the same studio, so.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Well, technically we are all at least 6 feet apart, so I guess
that's
okay.
I saw the photo. Yeah.
I mean, there's space between all of us, so I don't know if that's okay or not, but that's what we're doing.
Yeah, they say 6 feet apart, but did they say 6 feet apart in the same room for 4 hours?
I don't know. I get out of the room a lot. I think by next week I'm not going to be in there. I'm going to probably work from home.
I think at that point when you're in such close quarters with a bunch of men, I think you eventually become the same organism. So either you're sick or you're not, you know?
Yeah.
So I think you're fine.
We all smell the same now.
Thanks, Chris.
I love you guys.
Okay, Chris. Love good night.
That was Chris Ronji. You remember him, the longtime pre- and post-game host right here on Sports Radio 670. The Score, with some funny stories there. I never heard that one. I feel like all the years, Chris Tannehill, that we worked on the Sox broadcast, I heard every White Sox story I want to say I heard the Podsednik one before, not positive, but I never heard that one.
No, it's kind of amazing. I think it's because Jeff Cox, I think, only had one season coaching third base on the south side, so it just went by quickly. But I think obviously Brendan Story was the lead. It was the main one on the marquee. But I can't believe I heard a White Sox story that I never heard before from Chris Ranji, and boy, was that a good one.
Joe Ostrowski, Chris Tannehill here on Sports Radio 670, The Score. Let's go back out to the phone lines, Chris. Gary in Arlington Heights has been holding. Hey, Gary, thanks for hanging on.
Yeah. Hey, Joe. Hey, Tanny. Happy to hear from you. Tanny, glad you're on your own primetime radio show. Okay. I remember I was listening for the game, for the perfect game. I was driving. I was a limo driver at that time, and I'm driving tonight as an Uber driver. And I just pulled over to the side of the road, not taking any calls, just listening to you guys. So I'm not making any money, by the way. You're not helping me. That was probably one of the best games I ever heard. I had to hear it again. So that's the reason I tuned you in tonight. I just had to hear this game one more time. Are you guys playing the blackout game? Is that coming up soon, or is that not on the schedule?
It's funny you say that, Gary, because Tandy, as you know, I brought that up earlier today. It might just happen. It might happen. We'll see.
Yeah, because the vibes and the excitement from that blackout game, I still wish I was there. I mean, that game was unbelievable. You know, that was something else. So, and the World Series was great also. But just wanted to give my two cents and tell you both you guys are doing a great job.
Thank you, Gary.
Appreciate it.
It's good to hear from
people tonight. I mean,
I know. I know you're not used to calls on your show because you guys hate callers, but I love hearing stories like that, and just to see all the social media interaction and the people texting in here, they don't stop, and there's not a lot to talk about in the sports world right now. But just to bring a smile to people's faces for a couple of hours here, I'm glad we could be here for that.
Yeah, especially today, it's supposed to be opening day. I know a lot of people are feeling a certain type of way about it. But yeah, when I think about Burley's perfect game 11 years ago, it's one of those moments in sports that kind of bonds people together. I certainly, when I think of this game, I'll always think about you and being at the score and thinking about Ed and DJ and the Zerang. So I'm cool. It's so cool that we got to revisit it tonight, and it was a really good night to do it. So a great idea by Mitch, and I hope it doesn't get to the point where we'll have to run that blackout game. Although I would love to hear it,
yeah.
But I'm hoping that we can turn a corner in this world medically, so we won't have to go in the well for that one. But if we do, it'll be fun. I don't have a copy of it, so I haven't heard it since they played that game. So hopefully someone's got a copy of it at the station.
Yeah, I hope so. I would think so. And let's also mention this. You talked about 5 days later, Mark Burley retired the first 17 batters. At the time, an MLB record, 45 consecutive outs in his following start. And also, 1 week after Burley's no-hitter, Governor Pat Quinn, big White Sox fan, on July 30th, 2009, declared it Mark Burley Day.
Yes, he did. It was Mark Burley mania for a very short amount of time. Because he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. It's another great poster I have down in my basement. It just said perfect, and it's got the great photo of him pitching with the scoreboard behind him with all the zeros on it. But something that I forgot until this week when doing a little research, I forgot that he read the top 10 list on David Letterman's show.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. Do you remember? Yeah, you got to go back and watch it. It's pretty funny. It was during that same series against the Twins, because he's doing it at the Metrodome. But it's funny because him and Dave are just kind of going back and forth, riffing a little bit, and he does a pretty good job of it. It was top 10 things Mark Burley was thinking during things that he was going through his head during the perfect game. And it was pretty funny just to see, you know, I'm a big Letterman fan, but just funny to see him and Dave go back and forth. But Mark Burley was everywhere for a good couple of weeks there in 2009.
A frame with Ed's scorecard and that SI cover, I think, would be a good look in the basement, right?
Yeah, I've got them both next to each other, but just not in one piece. But yeah, they're always gonna be together, connected there. So,
Chris, I can't believe this was your first show. I realized that when Danny Parkins tweeted it a little bit ago. I didn't realize that you haven't hosted before, but I guess I don't really think about it that way because you've got an open mic every afternoon on the sport.
I do
so
have
it's not
an open
a big
mic.
Deal.
Whenever I have any bad thoughts that I feel like I need to get out, Mac and Parkins, they definitely let me do that anytime I want. So, I don't really see it as like, oh, my God, first air shift. But, yeah, it just so happens, and I'm glad it was with you tonight, so it was fun.
Hey, we all appreciate your mobster movie references, and because of you, during this pandemic, I've been thinking about going back in time a little bit and watching The Sopranos again.
Oh, you won't regret it. How many times have you seen it? Just once when it was on?
Yep, once through.
Okay. Yeah, you got to do it again because then you'll catch up on all the little subtleties, and it's definitely people talk about The Wire, but you know, which is a great show. It's number two for me, very solid number two. But like, you know, Sopranos is so multi-layered. I think you'll enjoy it, and I think sadly you'll have time to watch that and some other stuff too if you like. So
yeah, a lot of other stuff. Tanny, this was a lot of fun. Thanks for doing this, and I'll talk to you during the blackout game.
Thank you, buddy. I won't see you around, but I'll talk to you.
Yeah, who knows when that's going to start. That's Chris Tannehill. My name's Joe Ostrowski. We'll be going to Julie DeCaro next right here on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Thanks for hanging out. It was a two-hour, three-minute game. Mark Burley's perfect game, July 23rd, 2009. Happy we could bring that to you tonight and put a smile on your face. And Chris Raji brought it home with some great memories.
And we miss you, Moose.
Yeah, man. We lost him in 2012.
Take care of yourself. Yeah. That's Moose Gower.
Thank you. DJ, nice seeing you
to
again.
To the sixth inning.
My banana split.
Yeah, I can go for a banana split.
Yeah, you do. Oh, man. You know, sometimes you get caught up in it. You're like, okay, here we go, producing another Sox broadcast for the 20th straight day. But when Moose was there, everybody was happy. You would see him in person more than I would, right?
Yeah, and whenever we'd have the Friday night shows in the bullpen bar, Moose, yeah. I wish you could have had more time to ask Ronji, but, you know, his Moose stories. But he'd always come up, and people would give him a good-natured ribbing, and he would talk about how Canerco was part Italian and he liked him, and how Moose got his forearm so big. And but yeah, it was, and his granddaughter, who we mentioned, Addison, she's old enough to drive now, so we're really getting old.
Oh man. I want to thank Chris Dickens for producing tonight. Of course, again, Chris Tannehill, Julie DeCaro is next right here on Sports Radio 670 The Score. She'll be talking with former Major League pitcher Dan Heron coming up at 10 o'clock, and she'll be hanging out here until midnight. I'll be back tomorrow night, 6 to 10, right here on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Alexei! Yes! 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 Yes!
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.